Hello, lovely listeners. How is everyone today, this week, this glorious heatwave? You've been surviving, honey?
I have, actually. I've been really enjoying it since... Did I tell you? I didn't know if I told all the listeners that I went to Porto Primavera, where
did I... Did you? I can't remember. Did we talk about it in the intro? I think you must do a quick recap.
I think I was scarred. I went...
You mentioned the rain. Actually, you focused mainly on the rain rather than the musical acts.
Oh, well, that's what I was going to focus on again. Yeah. What I was going to say was I'm just so pleased to be in a dry, sunny climate, considering I was so drenched at Porto Primavera. I mean, what are the chances that you go abroad for a sunny experience? It's a heat wave in Britain.
I know, that is literally typical. Whereas I think it was like 40 degrees in Portugal like 2 months ago as well. It's just crazy climate change weather. That's my take on it.
So I've had a very nice... What did we do? Oh, we went to a bar together on the weekend.
We did. Guys, we had the best time. We had a fun little straight up date night on Saturday. We went to the Hutong bar in the Shard. Hutong is the Chinese restaurant, in case you don't know. It is so good. I've had some of the best meals I've ever had in London there.
Oh, that duck.
Oh, and they do this like amazing... like crispy, I think it's like crab that comes with all this like red Szechuan pepper. Anyway, we were actually not in the restaurant, so we can't give you a full review of that. We were in the bar, which is just next door. Obviously, still in the Shard, still on the same floor, still with all the same gorgeous views.
Glorious views.
We had some of the most delicious cocktails that were from the menu. Like, what was the one we really liked? So, I want to say it was called the Casamicos.
It was called Cachaquino.
Mexican vibes. It was a tequila-based drink. It was so nice. It had a little saffron... strands on the top.
Peach liqueur, fresh chili. I love chili and tequila as a combo.
It's so good. And then, as you guys can probably tell, we made it very clear that we liked the margarita type of cocktail. So they actually whipped us up a little off-menu cocktail each, which was so nice. Yours was like...
It was gorgeous. So we both gave our favourite fruit and our favourite spirit, and then they went with that. So mine was grapefruit. So I had a grapefruit margarita, not a Paloma. It wasn't long and it wasn't fizzy. It was a grapefruit margarita. I assume they swapped the lime for grapefruit.
And the service was spot on. Like, obviously the Shard is definitely a special spot for like a date night or a birthday. I actually once, you know, I've got the tradition with my two besties to taking each other out for our birthday meals.
Yeah.
We've taken... Amy out to Hutong before, which was obviously went down very well for a little birthday surprise.
Amazing.
And yes, the bar, honestly, guys, you get the most gorgeous views of London. We also had some very nice nibbles. I had some yummy prawn rolls.
We loved it so much that we were late to Scissor at the O2, which is just as well because she was very late. So.
And sadly for us, former guest Ray wasn't able to do her supporting slot because she's been ill. So we actually got there just in time for Scissor.
Yeah.
Which was great. We had a great time.
Travis Scott came out.
Yeah, really early on, actually, we were saying, about the third song. On with the episode.
On with the episode.
So, honeys, as you've probably guessed, this week is another cultural debrief. We had the wonderful Alistair Campbell. So today, we wanted to get our teeth stuck into the hottest pop culture talking points of the week, as per. Firstly, hun, should we tell them the number one topic, as they will well know from the episode description, the episode title,
yes.
But... we really couldn't sit down and not speak about the idol.
We couldn't. And guys, we're not going to go too much into the background because we did already cover that.
The Rolling Stone saga.
Yes.
So allegations of a toxic on-set environment.
So do go back to that episode.
We'll link it in the show notes. So firstly, guys, just for a very, very quick debrief, in case you have been living under a rock. The Idol is the new show from Abel Tesfaye, who's The Weeknd, and Sam Levinson, who is the man behind Euphoria. It's a HBO show. It's all about a pop star, Lily Rose Depp, who is essentially launching a comeback, having had a nervous breakdown after the death of her mother. And it's a lot, isn't
yes.
it?
The Weeknd stars in it himself and plays a nightclub owner, impresario, who is a bad man. I won't say more than that, but essentially, yes, he kind of brainwashes her. And it's about their relationship. Now, the show has been criticised for essentially being like rape fantasy, male gaze, torture porn type stuff. Yeah, classic.
And what's your thoughts then, now that we... okay. Actually debrief.
So, of course, immediately on Twitter and in the media, all the think pieces from like the New York Times, Roxane Gay, whatever, were all like, this is terrible and shameful and disgusting and like irresponsible, blah, blah, everything you would expect. But my first thoughts when watching the first episode and having spoken to other journalists is that I quite enjoyed the first episode. Yeah, I didn't think it was, I don't think it's good. I don't think it's well written. There are some scenes which are really well written, which I wonder if they are the scenes that they've kept in
from the previous director.
From the previous director. So guys, again, a little tiny recap. The director and co-writer was a woman, Amy Simetz, and essentially, apparently, allegedly, The Weeknd thought that the female gaze was too heavy and he booted her off and rewrote
it himself. Replaced her with Sam Levinson.
Yeah. I thought Lily Rose Depp is genuinely really good.
I mean, I feel like everyone's definitely enjoying it. That's the thing. Yes. Like, after all of the kind of shit that it was getting, every single review I've read is like, it's actually okay. And that's kind of how I felt. Like, okay, yes, this is not the paragon of like fucking TV making. And for HBO, it's a little bit crap. And I know that Euphoria is meant to be just kind of similar, but just so much better.
Yes.
Like the same thing done in a way better way. However, it's definitely fun. Like, you, why not watch it? It's one of those, don't you think? It's like, why wouldn't you want to catch up on like an episode of that?
Yes, it's like it's got property porn. It's filmed in The Weeknd's actual house.
It's his big Bel Air mansion.
Yes,
which he's Nobu is his neighbor.
Yes. Yeah. I'm intrigued, actually, that you've read good reviews or mediocre reviews, because the ones I've read have been absolutely annihilating.
Basically, all the reviews I've read are actually saying it's gross and it's this and there's that, but they're like, it's actually okay and it is watchable. Like, no one's saying, oh, no one wants to watch this. I think everyone seems in agreement that, like, it's a spectacle. Like, there's something, like, sordidly, like, irresistible about it, where you can't help but want to watch it. I mean, what I will say on the kind of, like, is it gratuitously sexual front is... yes, kind of. Like, at first you do think that it's like an irony that they're being like, oh, Jocelyn, the pop star, has just got this highly sexualized image. And then it just gets slightly ridiculous. And you're like, no, this is like actually comical. Like, maybe you're doing it to make a point about the sexualization of pop stars, but those dance moves and like her song. So her song, guys, for those of you who don't know, her big hit that she's meant to be like coming back with, that the whole show kind of hinges upon in the first few episodes, is World Class Sinner / I'm a Freak. And it is the most inane, ridiculous, like light S&M kind of lyrics, but actually just vacuous nothingness. And the dance moves, like they're shooting the video in the first episode and it's like hilariously absurd how sexual. Like at first I was watching it with Marlon and I was telling him about the whole drama and all the accusations of it being kind of like sexual torture porn and all the rest of it. And he was like, oh, this is just a normal amount of sexual, isn't it? Like he was like, they're obviously poking fun at how sexualized the pop star is. And then after about 5 minutes he was like, no, okay, actually, sorry, I take that back, this is actually absurd. Like, absurd.
It's like an homage to Britney Spears' The Slave for You, but obviously I think maybe like, but like taken to obscene proportions.
Yeah, and I think also the whole like, is she Britney, is so lazy. Like, yeah, okay, they make that reference very clear when the journalist who's played by Harry Neff says that she's got a touch with the Britneys or whatever, and she's had this big nervous breakdown and all the rest of it, and she's like this kind of very 90s style like young blonde pop star. But I definitely don't think that the show actually builds out her character enough to make her a compelling real pop star, actually.
No, she's got no interiority. And so one of the most controversial parts of the whole show is this like long-running theme of being choked and asphyxiation. And so...
yeah, that first... so guys, this is a spoiler for the first episode if you haven't seen it, but it's now, by the time this goes live, like the third episode's already out. So if you're not watching it and you want to watch it, what the hell are you doing?
Yes.
He basically puts like her dressing gown over... he being The Weeknd, his character Tedros, in the first end of the first episode, like puts her dressing gown like over her head and like ties it up and then like cuts a mouth hole. It's just, they're clearly trying to be subversive, but it actually is just like really cringe.
Yes, and I do understand some people saying that it's problematic considering there is some huge like focus in porn and just in like Gen Z dating culture of choking in the bedroom.
Is there?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So
I keep reading think pieces in Vogue and elsewhere being like this like choking obsession from men when like in hookups needs to stop. And you can tell it's definitely the sex scenes have been written by a guy because it's that thing of like she voluntarily shoves her finger down her mouth and sucks in. It's like,
yeah,
women don't volunteer. Like that's not something that women do.
And the whole shoot. Is it in the first episode? I think it is, where she's shooting her album cover picture and there's an argument about the fact that she like wants to expose her breasts, but like isn't allowed because that hadn't been previously written into her nudity clause. I just all felt like very unrealistic. Like I'm like fuck, that would actually happen. That a major, major pop star would just suddenly decide on the day on set that in fact they want to expose their breasts when they hadn't chosen that before.
Yes. And also there are scenes of her masturbating and choking herself. And again, it's just like we need to, I could understand those scenes if there was a backstory to maybe she'd been in an abusive relationship
before. Like why is she so like kinky? That's not explained.
Yeah. And there is a backstory that her mum was abusive and was highly controlling.
Oh, because she obviously is devastated by the death of her mum, and they're meant to have been like really close.
I think close in a very controlling, toxic relationship. And I guess, obviously, again, I'm no psychoanalyst, but there is a generalized kind of cliche view in psychoanalysis that if you've had an abusive relationship with your parents, you seek abusive relationships in dating. Obviously, that's a generalization. But I think that's very much what they're leaning on.
Well, again, like, this is another generalization and obviously a sensitive subject. And I'm about to say it. I'm like, why am I bringing this up? Because it's one of those things that we're
going,
like,
to get us cancelled.
No, it's just like when before we're like, we need to stop mentioning paedophilia. But often paedophiles have obviously experienced sexual abuse themselves when they were children.
Right. Yes.
That's kind of one of the major psychological triggers, I
think. Oh God. Oh my God. That's so dark.
So we definitely do replay patterns of whatever the hell.
Yeah, exactly. Also, talking of the journalist, how unrealistic a journalist?
Oh, she's just there all the time as well. It's like, sorry, but why? The Weeknd knows that's not the case. Like, the person that did his Vanity Fair profile might have got to hang out there for like 2 days, but a journalist does not trail you for weeks.
Especially when you're having nervous breakdown upon nervous breakdown and everything is going wrong and your team is just like letting the journalist
watch everything.
And also, I mean, the journalist looks great, but have you ever turned up to interview a celebrity in like the tiniest little miniskirt and heels and then like stand there like kind of flirting, like the eye contact that Lily Rose Depp's character is making with the journalist as she's doing her dance routine in episode
really
one.
Notice that.
I was like, are they going to get it on?
When she's Harry Neff's like at the top looking over from the balcony.
I mean, it's a level of sass and confidence I certainly don't have in interviews.
I mean, what I will say, Lily Rose Depp being good. Yes, I think, again, another spoiler, guys. There's a scene in episode 2 where she gets very upset about her mother's passing, essentially, while they're on a video shoot. And that, I thought, was like so powerfully
done.
Such
a good scene.
She was brilliant. But elsewhere, I just feel that she's not a particularly believable pop star, even outside of the whole like backstory, as we're saying. She is a brilliant actress in places, but you're like, why would Jocelyn be famous? She's got a very dated look. Mm. Like, she looks like a Britney from the early noughties or something, like we say, rather than like a modern day pop star.
Yes.
She's not a particularly good singer.
No.
She's not a very good dancer. She doesn't really have any stage presence. She's kind of like dead behind the eyes. Like, I do feel that the show needed to work harder to explain why she's a pop star. I actually saw a really funny piece at Esquire that I really enjoyed. It was by Henry Wong, and it was, is the idol's Jocelyn supposed to be a good pop star? An investigation. And then like the subheading is, she's a world-class singer, she's a freak. Is she a viable recording artist? You know, because
no.
And that song is very catchy. Like, Mon and I were singing it all weekend. We were literally, like, every time I could hear him in the kitchen, Mon was like, I'm a freak, yeah, you know what? And we were like, oh my God. What? And we were like discussing, like, would that ever be a real song? Like, is it? And I guess in a way, the show does hinge on that at the start, isn't it? It's like, is this a hit? Is this going to make her comeback, or is it average?
Yes.
And that in a way is like the meta question that's going on. But that song, can I just say, so I checked it on Spotify, it's got nearly 6 million streams.
Oh, wow.
So people do like it. They're also being quite clever and meta, which obviously they would be with The Weeknd, but they're basically dropping songs for like public consumption in time with the episodes.
Right.
And obviously The Weeknd wrote that song.
Like, yeah,
the
main, yeah.
With this guy, Mike Dean, and someone. But to me, basically, I think with that song especially, I'm like, this song is not good enough to like really carry the whole series. You know, like before where we were saying the Daisy Jones and the Six music is so believable and it makes
listened to the Aurora album so many times.
It makes the whole series like, it gives that like verisimilitude. I always pronounce it when you know.
Verisimilitude. I think that's right.
Yeah, it gives that in buckets. Whereas I feel with The Idol, you're like, would that woman, i.e. Lily Rose Depp, like that character, with that song in this day and age be a big star?
Yes.
I think not.
Gang, I don't know about you, but I am always trying to find ways to sprinkle my weekends with things that don't just revolve around drinking, like going to the pub. I try and include one wholesome activity that I feel inspires me creatively in some way, be that watching a good film or seeing an amazing art exhibition.
Same here, babe. It's always good to take in some culture, which is why we're so pleased that our new sponsor is the Art Fund's National Art Pass, an amazing pass that allows you to go and see paid exhibitions at museums and at art galleries at a fantastic 50% discount, valid for major galleries from the Tate to the National Gallery and the V&A. Some partnered venues are even free with the pass, such as the Brighton Pavilion, my fave, Cardiff Castle and Ham House.
I love it so much that my boyfriend and I have actually bought several passes for friends as gifts. They're perfect for birthdays. And for those interested in getting one of these amazing culture passes, excitingly, we have a fabulous extra discount for you.
Yes, we do. Until the 30th of June, you can try a 3-month trial National Art Pass for just £15. And our gorgeous listeners can also add a free plus one to their trial membership with promo code Straight Up. So it really is such a perfect way to do a wholesome date day with a friend or your significant other. Els, please tell me, what have you used your card for recently?
I loved After Impressionism at the National Gallery, which is on until mid-August because I just love Cezanne and Van Gogh. I went with a friend on a sunny Sunday morning, then we had lunch together in St. James's Park, and it was such a cute day. What about you, hon?
So cute, so wholesome. I love it. I am so, so excited to see Yayoi Kusama at the Tate Modern. You know, the gorgeous infinity light rooms that you've probably seen all over Instagram?
Yes, stunning. And if the fact that these exhibitions are half price with the Art Pass wasn't enough to convince you, then warm your heart in knowing Art Fund is the national fundraising charity for art. And so buying an Art Pass helps Art Fund support museums, galleries and historic places across the UK.
Head to artfund.org/national-art-pass to grab your 3-month trial National Art Pass for just £15. And do not forget to add your free plus one to your trial membership with the promo code Straight Up. That's all in caps, all one word, Straight Up. And gang, do be aware that you absolutely need to do it before the 30th of June. So get online, get ordering, and come and be cultural with us. Thank you so much to Art Fund.
Also, talking of things that aren't realistic, Lily Rose Depp's character Jocelyn would never fancy Ted Ross in a nightclub.
Oh, his rat tail. Sorry, but we must discuss the weekend in detail.
It is heinous.
That horrible little ponytail.
Well, it's actually off every time I see it.
Oh, and I know they've done that on purpose to be gross. They've made him gross on purpose. Because that was one thing I found really unclear as well. In the way that we're like, is Jocelyn supposed to be good? Or like, is Lily Rose Depp decent? In the first few episodes, I was like, is The Weeknd meant to be this vile and despicable? Like, is Ted Ross meant to be this shit? And then yes. I saw his interview where he's like, yes, he's meant to be like this disgusting psychopath. We made him as despicable as possible. We made his costumes
as gross. I think The
Weeknd
wanted him to be funny as well. They think it's a comedy, the show.
But he's like not funny.
No.
At all. And I did see a very funny tweet earlier that was, it was like one of his acting scenes when he's on Rodeo Drive with her. And it's so bad. It's actually comical, but it's like, how is he not mortified for this to be out there? Like, why is The Weeknd not embarrassed by this?
Because I would have, maybe he just said it in an interview, but apparently Sam Levinson had to like persuade him to star in his own show because that wasn't originally his idea. I was like, okay,
what, he wasn't going to be in it? Oh, sure. Yeah. Come on. Oh, he was going to be just behind the scenes. Surely not.
There's a really funny...
I don't buy that.
There's a really funny scene in the most recent episode, episode 3, where Jocelyn says at him and it's like, do you know what I actually think? I think you're gay. And then the camera pans in a really jokes way to his expression and he just looks so upset and mortified for like 10 seconds. And then those moments, I'm like, okay, you surely know that's funny.
There's
poking fun at the character.
There, yeah.
But I would like to understand, it's not like most nightclub, slimy nightclub owners have rat tails.
No.
So where is that coming from? Like, he doesn't look like any normal person.
No, he doesn't look like a real person. Again, like you say, that's not a convincing human.
He looks like a video game
weird character.
Yeah. It looks like his hair is like drawn on.
Yeah, a very unconvincing wig. And his voice sometimes, I mean, I know that The Weeknd is generally softly spoken anyway, but half his dialogue I can't hear because he's just whispering everything so quietly.
Oh my God, babe, do you know what's really upset me? And I'm sure it will too. The fact that his catchphrase to Lee Rose Depp is, hello, angel.
Hello, angel.
Considering that we say every...
Often.
We greet our listeners every episode. Hello, angels.
I know. Sorry, guys.
We are Ted Ross.
Literally. The piece that I really liked as well, the Esquire one, it literally starts like, hi, angels.
Oh, God.
He started that whole article.
Can we
like
not
that.
Say that anymore?
Yes. We just must say it with our own upbeat,
hello,
girly
angel. Okay, say your
twang.
Best. Say your best, Ted Ross. Hello, angel.
Oh, no. It's so good. So he's like, hi, angel.
Oh my God, that was really convincing. That was actually disgusting. Except I think he says hello.
Hello, angel. In the second episode as well, the big sex scene that kind of had everyone talking where
we
he
must
does
it.
That awful like sex talk. Basically, guys,
we can't
if you haven't
it.
Seen it, we're not going to go into too much detail, but she's on the bed, he's on the other side of the room, he's speaking to her. It's actually just so mortifyingly awful.
He's like directing a porn video. It's one of those I'm masturbating porn videos.
And that felt, I'm not going to lie, that whole scene felt incredibly male-gazy.
Incredibly. Like, I'm sorry, I don't know a woman who would be like, oh yeah, cool, yeah, you just give me like stage directions and I'll just like...
No, it was exactly what a pervy male director would like to imagine might happen with a 22-year-old pop star and a weird...
Exactly. With a blindfold.
Cult leader, yeah, rather
it's
than...
It's just so, like, porn 101. Blindfold. Yeah, it was... Finger gagging.
Yeah, like, it was just so obvious, but also unrealistic.
So maybe The Weeknd isn't having very good sex.
I think they're just both quite like, you know, there was that whole, they were like the sick and twisted minds of Abel Tesfaye and Sam Levinson. I think they just like revel in that like gross OTT. Like, I think that they almost think, this is my take on it. I think what I can only assume is that they're trying to be a bit meta and they're trying to satire that hypersexualization.
Yes.
And make a comment on it in some way, rather than just being it.
Except it's not clever enough to be proper satire.
It's nowhere clever enough because you don't get the point.
It's kiddie satire.
Like, you're like, yes, the pop industry is sexualized.
And what? Yes.
Where's the next?
And that's the thing, it's like not even that sick or twisted. Like,
no.
It's just a bit sick or twisted.
It's just like a fun show. Like, do you know what? The thing is, I would have watched this show regardless of like who was in it and stuff. If it was like this level of production, like show about a, you know, young pop star, like this is like right up our street anyway. So it's just something that I would watch regardless of how terrible it actually is. You know, kind of like how Emily in Paris is terrible, but I still enjoy it. It's like it's the same principle.
It's visual.
I like to hate watch it.
Yes, and this is where the Gen Zers really ought to be ashamed of themselves, because there they are on Twitter talking
Gen
about...
Gen Zers, let us know.
Yeah, sorry, Gen
about
Zers.
About the cohort.
But the most virtue signalling among you, sitting on Twitter being like, how dare they? This is like so problematic. And then they're fucking hate watching it and adding to HBO streams.
Well, this is the irony as well. It's got such bad reviews, but it actually broke like all of HBO's streaming records even last week. Like, it was, the first episode was like HBO's like most streamed first episode, beating White Lotus, beating, I can't even remember what the other thing was, but it was like one of their really big shows they've had recently that was quite surprising. But it's like, well, yeah, this is like some sexy, like, kind of sleazy like drama about a pop star with a pop star in it. Like, everyone is going to want to watch that regardless of how well it's
also
done.
The whole controversy and all the media attention it's had, all the negative media attention, has meant people are watching it.
Yeah, because you're like, I have to see this.
I want to see it.
One review I did read, which I have to say though, I did agree with. Again, it was probably like The Observer or The Guardian. And they were basically just saying how unbelievably relentingly like bleak it is. And how with Jocelyn, with Lily Rose Depp, like you just... all you get is like her pain. And that's why in a way it is like torture porn, because it's unrelentingly focused on like her upset, her pain, her trauma. There's no relief. Like, you're watching her face, like literally in agony. Like, she's so upset, like all the time. And there's no like break from that. Like, it's just like, all of you should just watch how absolutely broken Lily Rose Depp's character is.
Yes.
And that's basically the main narrative.
And in that sense, that
thing
is torture porn, because it has absolutely no intelligent...
relevance, really. Yeah, you're just watching her suffering. And you're like, what is this suffering for?
Yes, there's no complexity behind it. I mean, to be fair, and I said this earlier, but I do think Lily Rose Depp is very good.
Yeah, I keep flip-flopping. As I say, like, I thought she was brilliant in the scene we just mentioned. And I think you really do feel her pain. And like, her suffering is so believable. But I also think... and I know she's probably meant to be a bit like this, because again, the character, but it's a bit flat, it's a bit vacuous, a bit dead behind the eyes at points.
Do you know, I've just had a thought. Daniel Levy was in the first episode as the PR.
Yeah.
He's just utterly disappeared.
He has actually. He must pop back in it. I will say though, because I remember you mentioning just from the things, you were like, oh God, I feel like it's like Dan Levy was good, but you're like, I feel like everyone else is terrible acting. But actually I do like everyone else. Like, I think Troye Sivan's fine in it. I like the Nikki, the lady manager. Like, I actually quite like the acting.
Nikki has grown on me.
Yeah.
At first she was a bit too evil. It was a bit on the nose. Like, ooh, evil manager. Yeah. Moses Sumney is Isaac. Moses Sumney is an artist, musician.
Yes, and he's got lots of songs on episode 3 soundtrack.
Interesting. He's good. And the assistant, the funny assistant.
Oh, her friend.
And that's the other thing. So many celebrities have been groomed into cults.
Have they?
Yeah.
Like who?
Like River Phoenix.
Oh, he was in a cult.
Yeah. Rose McGowan.
Good point. Oh my God, yes.
There's actually quite a few others, because I've done I've edited countless Telegraph pieces. It's core Telegraph readership stuff there.
I mean, I will say as well, American Honeys, let me know if this is literally wildly off the mark. But I do feel like the kind of novelty of the cult is more of a thing in America.
It definitely
than it is.
Is
here in the UK.
Yeah. What was the big church cult?
Well, there was obviously the huge Jonestown Massacre story, which is like the number one cult story of all time in America.
And then there's one called, like, I don't know how to pronounce it, Nixivim, N-X-V-I-M. There's the Manson cult. Yes, it's a highly American thing, isn't it? But I haven't heard of a cult leader in the music industry. Actually, now that I think about it, I do think Tedros really does remind me of Tina Turner's very abusive husband, Ike Turner, who made her into a star, essentially, at the beginning.
That's a really good point, and would be actually an interesting character reference. I could imagine that The Weeknd would have knowingly drawn on that.
Yes, because he had a whole...
very charismatic type, but he's actually really dangerous.
And she said that he would beat her and that he would basically rape her. And it was, she like lived in fear of him. And I think he was abusive to other people that he worked with as well. So yeah, maybe The Weeknd looked at that. But do let us know if there are any other wicked musical cult leaders.
Yeah, that we're missing.
Any that we still know of?
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested to see where the show goes.
It's only five episodes.
I know, 5 episodes is so dowry as well, but I did see that HBO had refuted a statement that said that it would only be one season.
Yes.
So there probably will be a second season. But 5 episodes, I mean, goodness me, how much time and money and effort went into that for 5 episodes?
I know, it's weird.
I can't see how much more, like, you barely got anything out of the show yet. And as much as I've enjoyed it, like I say, just, you know, for fun watching, like... there's absolutely no real narrative thrust going on.
Just thrusting.
Just literal thrusting.
Just literal thrusting. Yes, so I have to say I've enjoyed watching it because when I'm tired and lazy after work, I just want to watch things that look nice.
Same. That's the thing. I love like a glossy drama. Although, you know that I'm like insane because I still haven't watched Euphoria.
Oh, you would love it, babe.
I've got to. I think it's just because I tried it a few times and it was during the pandemic. And, you know, I've mentioned this before, honey, is how I became like a massive wetter in the pandemic and just couldn't deal with watching anything negative.
Yes.
And those opening... That opening episode with Zendaya just looking like so like broken and traumatized. I was like, I just can't handle this.
No.
Can't handle depressed teenagers right now. But I think I'm now emotionally strong enough that I could dive back in.
I have to say, Rue's storyline, Zendaya, who plays the drug addict, is desperately sad. But there are lots of moments of comic levity. Sydney Sweeney's character is genuinely very funny.
And everyone is kind of saying that that's the problem really, isn't it? Is that Sam Levinson did do something very clever with Euphoria, whereas this is like a lazy man's version. Like it's like the kind of glossy disrepair.
Yes.
But done in a very more like two-dimensional way. I mean, because I haven't seen it, but Sydney Sweeney mentioned, we talked about this, right? And it's well known that she did take issue with how much he focused like on her boobs, her naked boobs in the film.
Yeah.
She's like a young woman. So he's clearly a bit pervy. Like that is his angle.
Yeah.
And he had the actual porn star in it.
Yes. Cherry something. But to be fair, Lily Rose Depp has said she never felt more empowered or supported creatively than by Sam and Abel.
I know I saw that, but I'm like...
classic cult behaviour, that.
Yeah.
He gave her a tagline.
And also, like, yes, you might have felt really supported and all the rest of it, but again, it's really difficult though, isn't it? Because it's not up to the actors to, like, control what the final product is. To be fair to her, you probably don't really know when you're filming all those scenes quite what it's going to come out like at the end anyway.
Yeah, and genuinely from what I mean, she seemed so proud and very happy at Cannes. She like did all the press for it. She does seem genuinely very happy with it, and I do think it is actually a bit patronizing for all the journalists to be like, oh, but she was, you know, she's poor Lily Rose Depp, a victim of this series. It's like, well, she may really like it, and who are we to say that she was, you know, violated creatively by Abel and Sam Levinson? She's proud of her work, then that's,
yeah,
she has agency, she's a grown woman.
Yeah, she obviously I don't feel that she was like creatively violated.
Yeah,
if that's the choice she wanted to make and she's happy with it, then like good for her.
Also with Lily Rose Depp, I haven't seen her in anything else. Actually, I do think this is gonna like raise her star power by quite a lot. I've never seen
surely her. When I was having a look at Spotify at her previous songs, I guess I was like, what, she has more than just I'm a Freak? And she's got quite a few songs that are from the soundtrack of some film that I actually haven't heard of, but is obviously a similar thing where she sang. So it's called Yoga Hosers, some kind of film she was in, but that has a soundtrack. So to be fair, perhaps she is actually quite a good singer.
Oh, maybe.
And dancer.
Well,
she's
Vanessa
a kind
Paradis,
of musical theatre actress.
I really like Vanessa.
And that's why they chose her for it. Yeah, I do think as well, sorry to go back to what we said, and this is no criticism of her, of how she looks. Like, she's absolutely stunning. Like, her face is beautiful.
And carries emotion very compellingly.
Yeah, but I do think as well, and maybe this is part of the satire, but it's a very old school view of what a pop star would be.
of what she would look like. Yes. What all the outfits?
Like, the outfits are absurd. I'm sorry, but even like the most amazing, like, sexually liberated artists, like today, like someone like Tuvalu. Like, I literally saw a video of her this morning playing at a festival, like showing her boobs to the whole crowd, and like, you know, it's done in this like very empowered like way. But she, when she's jamming, like even when we did the podcast interview with her, she was sat on her bed in like a massive t-shirt, yes, and like horrible clothes. Like, it's not realistic that you would, even as that much of a kind of sexualized superstar, when you're off duty at home on your own, like, fuck, you'd be wearing a crop top that doesn't even cover the bottom of your,
yes,
boobs.
Or
like a nipple cover,
or
and that's it.
Or the beaded thong. It's like,
you just wouldn't wear that at home off duty, even if you were the kind of most sexualized, yes, star going.
I mean, maybe you would. It's a bit like what guys hope that girls are wearing when they say,
exactly,
what are you wearing?
That, exactly.
Oh,
that.
I'm wearing like, and then you lie and say, yeah, like, oh, I'm wearing this really racy little thing, when you're actually wearing like your, I don't know,
boxer shorts that belong to someone else.
Yeah, exactly. One last thing I'll say is that I did find it very funny that someone had got an intimacy coordinator on the phone to be like, do you feel betrayed and upset by HBO mocking intimacy coordinators by having a scene where the intimacy coordinator is locked in a cupboard?
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, yes, I feel totally betrayed.
Oh, really?
And it was just like, oh.
She was actually offended by it.
It's like, come on. Like,
but it was a really stupid scene. I mean, maybe this is what goes on set sometimes that we don't see, and then therefore, no, that's why
intimacy coordinator do not get locked in cupboards.
No, but I mean, like, as in intimacy court, the reason he gets locked in the cupboard is because he's being like super annoying about the fact, as I mentioned earlier, Lily Rose Depp basically wants to like expose her boobs, and that's not in the contract.
Yes.
And so therefore he's like, we need to like get the contract sorted out before you can actually do that. But I actually don't even buy that, because at the end of the day, like, fuck, an intimacy coordinator would stand in front of the massive star that's hired them and tell them they're not allowed to do what they want with their own body.
Yeah,
that actually wouldn't happen.
No,
surely.
Exactly. And you know, okay, I can understand that if that scene happened in a non-comedic show right at the beginning, when intimacy coordinators were still being mocked and not used in every single major TV show ever, like 5 years ago, then it'd be like, oh god, don't mock something when we're genuinely trying to like just make like safer sets. But everyone has an intimacy coordinator now. It is the mainstream thing to do. They're not at
risk.
They
can't really like shoot big films, wouldn't shoot sex scenes without one.
No, or like, if you don't want one, it has to come, the actors have to agree. Like, do you remember we talked about Good Luck to You, Leo Grand?
Yes.
They all decided not to have one because they did their weird, like, let's
natural
get naked
way
together,
yeah,
with the director. But yes, I mean, I don't think intimacy coordinators are like being undermined. It's just a stupid, funny scene.
I will say as well, I'm not sure how comedic the show is supposed to be.
I think The Weeknd said in the Vanity Fair interview that it's a comedy.
Right.
But I may have made that up. Mm. Certainly there are comedic moments.
There are.
Anyway, so guys, let us know what you think of The Idol.
Yeah, I do.
It does just show the absolute just hypocrisy of everyone like shouting from the rooftops about how awful it is and how...
it's got the worst reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. It's literally got like 2.7,
yes,
or something.
Everyone's so offended by it, and yet everyone's watching it. And that
everyone's
is
hate watching it, literally.
And that's the same with like tabloid journalism and everything. It's like, well, you guys are fucking buying the stuff. Stop buying it, and then they'll stop making it.
And in a way, that's probably where Sam Levinson and Abel Tesfaye think they're so clever, because they're probably like, oh, we made the show we knew people wanted to see.
Yes.
So like, yes, it's a bit voyeuristic, and but that's what people want. This is literally what people are looking for TV, so let's give the people what they want.
Yes, and also, and this is, again, not a good thing, but I think there is part of us that we do want to see broken down, bad pop stars. We want to see, that's why those pictures
the stuff
of
was
Britney
so big,
when,
yeah,
were sold for millions of pounds or whatever it was, because we like to see people on the brink.
Have a meltdown.
And that's awful of us, and we should all be ashamed, but yeah. Which leads me very nicely on to the role of the paparazzi in Black Mirror.
The new series of Black Mirror.
Guys, PSA, we have to tell you about London's hottest new hack that is a game changer for date night and will be music to the ears of all the foodies listening, I promise.
Yes, honeys, you know that we love a fancy meal here at Straight Up. So Yonder is a premium lifestyle credit card and our new sponsor. And hear us out, this isn't just any ordinary credit card. The points you earn can be spent at some of London's best restaurants, cafes, bars and entertainment hotspots. And new members can try Yonder out for free for the first 6 months.
Bargain. The money you spend using the card, from your weekly food shop to your summer holiday, converts directly into points that you can then spend at these incredible places, from Bow to Cricket to Crossbows to Lena Stores, you name it.
Now, I've had credit cards with convertible points before, but they're always so limiting in terms of where you can spend them. It's business hotels or boring brands that feel quite irrelevant or, quite frankly, just way too expensive. Yonder is the first credit card that lets you spend points in the places that you'd actually want to go anyway.
Trust me, guys, it's so good that when my boyfriend first got Yonder and took me out for a free dinner with his points, so romantic, I immediately reached out to Yonder myself to see if they partner with us, because I had to tell you about it.
It's also genuinely an amazing way to discover new restaurants or try new things in London, particularly since the experiences are changed up every month. I, for one, have booked to go to a pasta workshop at a restaurant in Shoreditch using my points, and it's definitely not something I would do otherwise. Very exciting.
Very exciting, babe. Similarly, my boyfriend and I went to Soho's new super cute, cosy British restaurant, Sussex, on Sunday evening, which I definitely wouldn't have done otherwise. I would be at home, pigging out on a Deliveroo, feeling sorry for myself.
So, the details. After you've passed the 6-month free trial, the card costs £15 a month, which may seem like a lot if you don't already pay for a premium credit card. But something that immediately makes the cost worth it for me is the fact that the monthly premium includes worldwide travel insurance, and you can use the card abroad with no FX fee, no matter what the currency.
Considering I pay similar travel insurance anyway and rack up about 15 quid in currency conversion fees every time I go abroad, it was a no-brainer for me.
Head to yondercard.com to download the app and try Yonder for free for your first 6 months, plus get £5 to spend on one of Yonder's treat experiences. Approval is subject to eligibility and you need to be over 18 and a UK resident to apply. A membership fee and T's and C's apply. Borrow responsibly. The representative rate is 64% APR variable. So go get earning those points.
Thank you to our partner Yonder.
So there's a new episode as part of the anthology, which just dropped on Netflix. It's called Maisie Day, and it's about a pop star who is very unstable and goes through a
hit and run
accident. I can't say too much more, yeah. but basically then completely goes off the rails, has to leave the TV show or film that she was shooting. It's not clear which one it is. And then goes AWOL and disappears. And Zazie Beetz plays a paparazzo, I should say. Who
is that a gendered term? I didn't know that.
No, it's just singular.
Oh,
because my friend Alice, such a nerd, love her. But whenever we talked about paninis, she'd be like, "It's actually a panino."
No, because it's, stop yeah. it. It's actually yes, a and panino.
And when we were in Costa at wow. uni, she would refuse to order a panini. She would always have to say, "I'll have a panino."
Is she Italian?
No, she just studied Italian. Right. And I was like, "Alice, please stop embarrassing us. Just say panini like everyone else."
I'll have the ham and cheese panino.
Anyway, so back to the paparazzo. So anyway, back to the paparazzo. Zazie Beetz plays a paparazzo who is at a bit of a crossroads in her life. She clearly feels really guilty that her profession leads to so much unhappiness for celebrities. She's reeling from the fact that a picture she took of a guy who was having an affair with a man, he clearly was straight in public, led to him taking his own life. So she's reeling from that. And
God, I'm really glad you said that because I totally missed that part.
Yes, it's not a spoiler because it's right at the start.
Yeah, yeah. That I literally like didn't probably concentrate in the first like 3 minutes and I missed
yes.
it.
Yes, so he's like, you. Please.
That makes a lot more sense now yes. about her entire yes. journey in the episode.
So he's like, please don't publish that, it will kill me, you're literally killing me. And then he kills himself. So she reels from that, but then nevertheless she can't resist a tip off that she gets from a fellow paparazzo who says this Maisie Day, the celebrity's gone AWOL, the paparazzi agency are offering 30k for the first sighting of her. And as he beats his character, goes off to try and hunt down, literally hunt this poor woman. And I won't say any more, but I would like to talk to you, Cathers, on the role of the paparazzi today. Have you ever seen one in action?
I definitely have, like at red carpet events and stuff. So I've seen them more where they're supposed to be, if you know what I mean, yes. rather than noticing them pop up somewhere where you wouldn't expect them.
Mm.
So I actually haven't, I know obviously very well, and you see it on TV and whatever, about like how disgraceful they can be in terms of pushing people's personal boundaries, getting yes. in their space, whatever. But I've actually always had very good experience with paparazzi because
when they're taking your pictures.
Yeah, no. When I'm like standing next to them as like one of the fellow working normies, they are just men taking pics for AP and The Wires and places like that. There's obviously Dave Bennett. He probably wouldn't like me calling him a paparazzi.
Oh, yes. I mean. He's always on Getty.
Yeah, yeah. Dave Bennett's like the party guy that used to do loads of the GQ pictures. And
yes. And actually, you're right. They're always men. So it's interesting that the Black Mirror had a female paparazzi.
Yeah, I found that really interesting because yeah. I've never seen a female paparazzi.
No, me neither. Actually, and this makes me sound so up myself and I don't mean it to be, but whenever I go to those events, red carpet events, I'm always so offended when I come out of a car and go down a red carpet and they, for some reason, immediately know I'm not famous.
I know. They just know we look way yeah. too so like normal.
Are they going to like take a picture and just like, just in case?
Yeah, in case I'm famous.
Like, literally know what, they're like, oh, go through. They won't even, yeah. they don't even move their like, camera.
Oh, you're working booking the event. Off you go.
Yeah, even though it's so really upsetting. Anyway, so a little, I thought you might like to know about the most famous paparazzo ever.
I would.
The godfather of paparazzi was Ron Galilea, who used to hunt, literally hunt, Jackie Onassis, who used to sue him for, she sued him twice for harassment. She even got a temporary restraining order over him. And she said she lived in a prisoner in her apartment and lived in dread fear.
Yeah. And I mean, you have to be a certain kind of person to be a paparazzi and be cool with that, with cool with spending your entire life, like, hunting down others mercilessly.
Yeah, so I thought that maybe post-Britney and just generally where we are in our culture, that there would be a reckoning with paparazzi and they would kind of regret and they might talk about their regrets. But Ron Galella was profiled by an Esquire writer, Bruce J. Friedman, only last year, I think probably in relation to the Britney stuff. And he was completely unrepentant in a like almost funny way. But the writer says, interestingly, that he thought that maybe Galileo's voyeuristic stubbornness had to do with the need to catch his parents in the act of connubial mischief.
What?
Cathartically recreating that primal bedroom shocker in every youngster's life.
What? So he saw his parents having sex and now he's trying to recreate that moment.
That's what the writer thought. That's what
did he see his parents having sex? Has he said that before in the piece?
No, that's just the very, very...
That's his own, like, Freudian take on it.
Yeah, very arrogant take from the writer to put that in the piece. But anyway, so he put this to Ron, and Ron said, no, it's all about just a challenge. And he thought that Jackie was always so difficult with him, would, for instance, always, like, repeat the same outfit when he was there so that, like, it was a dud shot because she wasn't wearing anything interesting, or, like, would keep her sunglasses on, or would just be as, like, uninteresting as possible, that it just riled him up so much that that's it.
They are, there's, there, I will, again, sorry if I'm offending any paparazzi, but there's definitely a sense when I've seen them talk as like talking heads, yeah, and there's a real sense of entitlement.
Yes.
That they are allowed to get whatever pictures they like of whoever they can if they're there at the right time. Like, it's this presumptiveness over other people's image. Like, they think they have a right to, yes, someone else's image. They really do. They're this, it's really odd.
Even the Duchess of Cambridge, when she was like with the long lens and they shot her on the boat from literally so far away from, yeah, shore. I found
with
that, like,
out,
with her boobs out. I can't believe that happened. Anyway, he says he has his limits. He
says shameless. They're actually shameless. And I think it's a really awful, toxic culture, you know, amongst all of them. And you even do see it in Maisie Day, sorry to interrupt you, but when they're all like racing, you know what I mean? It's like, yes, they're all trying to get somewhere as fast as possible. And they're like practically mowing down people in the street just to like get from A to B because they, yes, won't get that shot.
Well, yes. And Ron even says that, like, it was completely par for the course and all to go through red lights, always. No wonder then the Princess Diana thing happened, if they're, like, being that unsafe on the roads. Yes, and I think Zazie Beetz does say that she tries to bring empathy to her character, but ultimately you do see...
It's like, ultimately, her character is empathetic.
To a point.
But ultimately, I feel that the vibe is, like, paparazzi will put money before anything.
Yes. And you really see that at the end, but let's not spoil it. He said his limits were if they... Well, he won't go inside anyone's home. I was like, how is that a limit?
Breaking and entering.
Breaking and entering.
Oh, you're a decent man then.
Yeah.
You don't break and enter.
And he said, and I won't follow a famed person into the ladies' room. Again, it's
thanks.
I can't believe that's your limit.
Like,
that's your line.
The bare minimum.
But he says if they have glass windows of their home, it's another ball game.
And that's what I mean. It's this entitlement as even like, well, if they have glass windows, it's their problem kind of thing. Like, you are not entitled to take photographs of someone else for money for you. Like, I do feel in a way that the whole like paparazzi industry is literally just a microcosm or speaks to everything that is so grossly like wrong with our society.
Absolutely.
And with capitalism.
That thing is like the reason those pictures are so expensive is because we buy the tabloids.
People want to see them.
And then I was reading some interviews with Rick Mendoza, who's Britney's most
famous. Yeah. He's the one that I've seen as like a talking head quite a few times in docs and stuff. And he's very like, gives no shits.
Absolutely gives no shits.
Unapologetic.
So his belief, his argument is that we make them. We make them who they are. They need us to be famous, which I mean is quite an obvious argument. But so I think that's why a lot of them don't care, because it's like, well, you'd be nothing without us. In their eyes, I don't agree.
Well, some of them do play the game. Like, even with Kim Kardashian, the guy that she worked with, whose name actually escapes me right now, he's a British guy, and he kind of says, I made Kim Kardashian famous, because he basically helped her to set up relationships with paparazzi to shoot the right stuff at the beginning.
Yes.
So she had a perfume launch, and they got, air quotes here, like, animal rights activist to like throw flour on her at the perfume launch. And that was like the biggest talking point. Like it made this massive story that wouldn't have been a story. Like otherwise no one cares about Kardashian's perfume launch. This was obviously about more than 10 years ago. But she and this guy like purposefully orchestrated this along with the paparazzi and said like, be there, there'll be something for you to take pictures of, and kind of like created the moments for them.
Yes.
And everyone says that is what she and their family generally are so good at. Like the celebrities that seem to be able to cope with the level of intrusion that the paparazzi actually bring are those that know how to like play the game and actually want to engage.
Like even Hailey Bieber were like, okay, yes, you can take my photo, but just let me put my makeup, like let me just fix my makeup first.
Yeah, although I did see a TikTok of her the other day saying how much it's like deeply, deeply upset her. Like she's been upskirted twice.
Oh, shit.
Justin said recently to a paparazzi, like, no, what are you doing? Basically someone was trying to take a picture from like the ground up and she was wearing a skirt and Justin got involved and was like, what
Men
are you doing?
Men with cameras on their shoes. I've warned this stuff about them before.
You did.
I said they were everywhere. Yeah,
they are.
But it's, I would be interested though to know. So I read in a Guardian piece last year that said that it interviewed lots of paparazzi who basically said that like it's the gold rush is over, that they're very respectful now, that they're definitely not the monsters that they were.
It's not the private light.
It's definitely not 2007 again. But that's because there's so much less money in the shots. So I would wonder if there was still a really lucrative industry, whether it would go back to that horrific violation.
I think if there was an industry for it, there would, yeah.
Yeah.
And people would pay for them. I guess it's just now as well, a lot of celebrities will like pip the paparazzi to the post on purpose. As you say, I guess a Jackie O like technique. For example, Blake Lively, with her most recent pregnancy, she was getting so sick of the paparazzi trying to get shots of her pregnant that she basically like really revealed it herself on Instagram and was like, and to the paparazzi following me, this is, you now can't get these pictures because this is how I am and what I'm looking like. You know, it's kind of like people reclaiming their own image through their social media.
Talking of pregnancy ones, Rihanna apparently has this long-term like favorite paparazzo that she works with, and she's the one that called him to do her pregnancy reveal shots. He's called Miles Digg, and she's been working with him for 10 years.
Yeah, so they have like faves. Yeah. So Kim Kardashian has one. There's a video of her saying to North, when North is like, she tells the kid, she's like, be nice to him, I've known him since I was living in my tiny apartment 20 years ago. And stuff like, there are certain paparazzis that she'll be like, those are the ones we're nice to. The other ones won't.
And so, and as we know, so many of the B-list celebs call the paps themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of them also do it for reputational management. And I did wonder, actually, Dominic West, who was had the affair.
The Lily James Venice photos. Were they Venice or were they Rome? Sorry, guys.
Rome, I think they were
wrong.
Rome, yeah. And
the two actors, guys, just FYI, Dominic West is married, and there was pictures of them like on a Vespa together and all looking very cozy.
Kissing
and a bit like he was quite frankly having an affair.
Quite frankly, Kata's favourite little phrase. You know how they did the I'm going to hold my wife's hand outside our family home the next morning pictures?
Yeah.
I bet he called them. I bet
he
they
must
called
have, because they wouldn't just be there.
Yeah.
He literally must have called them.
And be like, I'm going to hold my wife's hand. We're going to do a united front situation.
Yeah.
Come get us.
Yeah, they must. And also, I guess there is obviously, as we well know, the tricks of the trade, story swapping that goes on a lot.
Yes.
So if they've got a really negative story, you can switch them out for one perhaps that is still juicy but doesn't make you look as bad.
Oh my God. I got told such a good one the other day. Oh no, you told me about it. It's you.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how to say this now because I don't want to bait anything out. So at a big wedding recently, a former reality TV star allegedly cheated on his wife and had to like pay off the Daily Mail not to cover it.
Yeah. I will come up. Thing is, you're just biding your time.
I mean, I'd love to know how much the Daily Mail take for that. Like, what is their fee? Okay, we won't publish that story. You must pay us. What is it? 20,000? It's got to be a substantial
number. It's
got to be more than 10.
Because they definitely don't really need it.
They wouldn't want it.
To round off this little segment, I will tell you the most expensive paparazzo shot ever sold.
Oh, go on.
Guess.
Princess Diana on the boat. As in the shot of her on the diving board sticking out.
No, it's but very close. It is Princess Diana, but it was with Dodie.
Oh, yes. Everyone wanted the new boyf.
Yes, and it was just a month before they both died.
Oh,
and it was sold for, guess?
Okay, so this was like the 90s.
1997.
And so in a way, ironically, though, there was like the big bucks era. So I'm going to guess.
Do it in dollars.
Ooh, I'm going to guess $1 million.
$6 million.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So
I don't know what I make as well of the whole thing. And this is no criticism or judgment either way. As listeners know, we like a bit of Meghan and Harry. But the whole thing recently where he said they were like chased through paparazzi after that event in New York.
Oh, yeah, then it turns
and
out
it was
they
kind
weren't.
Of discounted. Wasn't it like the New York mayor or something was like, I don't think they were.
Oh, yeah. The New York police were like, we literally have had no report of this.
Of dangerous driving and stuff.
But then their bodyguard gave an interview saying
he feared for their lives. So I don't know.
I mean, they do drive like absolute nutters.
It wouldn't surprise me.
No, it wouldn't surprise me at all. That's like, they're doing anything they can, especially if we say it's Prince Harry and Meghan. Like, they're going to do literally whatever it takes to get that shot.
Did you see that her Spotify podcast has been cancelled?
Yes, not renewed for a second season.
And she's had to pay back some of that $18 million.
Really?
So. Or rather, she hasn't been paid the full $18 million.
Because didn't they say that there wasn't enough content to like warrant it or something?
No, and it was shit.
And was it? And then I saw an article that was saying how a big Spotify exec had called them grifters.
Well, I don't know. But what I will say is that I did listen to a few episodes and I was deeply unimpressed. Apparently, yes. She didn't even do the... She would get other producers to, like, do a lot of the interviews and stuff.
What, and then just feed in the audio?
Because you know... No, because you know how she would also interview experts?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I might actually just put this out there now. I have never listened to it.
Well, you're not missing out on...
I think you told me from early on how dire it was.
I think I had to for my job.
Yeah, and so I was like, well, I'm just not going to waste 40 minutes of my life on that.
Yeah, it was just a bit sort of... I mean, flat. Celebrities interviewing other celebrities...
That's the thing. It's just not interesting. I mean, people used to say that when we were working in magazines like 7 years ago. If you get a celebrity to do the cover interview, it's gonna be shit. That just is, unfortunately, the way, isn't it?
Although, a really good celeb-on-celeb interview that I read recently was Kieran Culkin from Succession being interviewed by Taika Waititi.
Oh, I'd really like that.
It was good. They got deep because they're both quite weird.
Yes, I saw a really good TikTok actually over the weekend that was showing how it was a scene from Succession along with the script and showing how much they stayed to the script. So you could see like word for word where the actors were like ad-libbing, and obviously Kieran Culkin is doing like lots of really good
yes
ad-libbing. He's kind of the best
such
at
a
it,
maverick.
Yeah.
I've weirdly been delivered all the Succession scripts to my office.
You? What, to keep?
Well, I guess they're, like, I think they're publishing them. I think, no, as in as like in
as
book,
a book
form. Yeah.
That's quite a yeah. cute little thing.
Yeah. I guess it's every single writer in Hollywood is going
to
be like pouring
desperate
over it like
it.
The Bible. Yeah. And Taika Waititi and Kieran talked about the fact that they both took a leaf out of Jeff Goldblum's book when it came to on-set manners, and they would memorise the call sheet so that they could know everyone by name before the crew had even introduced them to each
Aww.
Other. It's kind of creepy, but kind of cute.
I mean, I think it's probably so unexpected from the actors, like the talent, that when they do, it's like a really big deal. Like, I've always liked that. Whenever you interview really famous people or you're around really famous people, when they remember your name and they make the effort to use it, and you always know they're using it on purpose to like show off the fact that they have remembered
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I like that. I'm like, fair enough. You're like personalizing me. You're not just speaking. Like, whereas I will say, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, probably am, but one of my worst celebrity encounters ever was with Justin Timberlake. He was honestly
I didn't know you'd
horrific.
Interview Justin Timberlake.
I didn't interview him. I literally like stood near him. Someone I tried to like, it was mortifying. I tried to tap him on the shoulder. It was actually, weirdly enough, my first ever Men of the Year, GQ, which I did. I was interning in the PR department while I was still at uni one summer. I did a month of interning there and it just happened to fall when Men of the Year was. And Justin Timberlake was one of the winners. And he was just the most like rude, stuck up, miserable person.
Oh my God. I'm so fascinated by that.
Yeah.
Why do you think...
Like cold and really like didn't want to speak... Like he wouldn't speak to anyone. He wouldn't... I was literally wearing like a GQ t-shirt. Like I was like staff. Like it was very obvious that I was working there. And I think I was even asking him like, can you move here? Can you do this? I was, as I say, doing the press team. So we were doing like a step and repeat and all the rest of it. It was when I was still at the Royal Opera House. Yeah, just was literally... pretended as if like I wasn't there. Like I've never felt so small ever.
What a dick.
Like it was like, you just don't exist. You can look at me and tap me and say things, can you move this way all you want, I'm just literally not going to even look at you.
What a prick. Also, have you seen him dancing on stage recently? He should definitely never go on stage again.
No, actually, maybe. Is it just really cringe and
it's
daddish?
So shit. He must retire.
Yes, well, he's been keeping a bit of a low profile since all of the Jessica Biel, well, the paparazzi shots, quite frankly, that got him with the old female colleague, looking a little bit snuggly.
God.
I think Jessica Biel might even been pregnant at the time, or
that
maybe they just had a child.
Despicable.
It wasn't a good look, I will say that. And you would think, and I'm not saying that celebrities should live in fear and should never be able to like literally do anything in public, but you would think, having been famous for decades, having been followed by paparazzi, you would start to become incredibly paranoid about paparazzi.
Yes, you would. I've just remembered a really good piece of gossip. Actually, I don't know if I can say it on.
Oh, go on.
But apparently Maya Jama and DiCaprio were having a thing.
Oh, allegedly. Yeah,
allegedly.
Allegedly, guys, allegedly, allegedly.
Anyway, that's over
now.
Juicy. But apparently it was a
quick frisson,
a quick
fling.
Thing at New York Fashion
Week. I mean, good for her. Like, you get it, honey.
Yeah, you get that.
Like,
fat old
you know,
man.
It is unfortunate that he hasn't aged that well.
No, I'm being harsh because actually I was looking at some topless pictures of him in the Sun today because the Sun ran a story about like from hunk to hunk or something. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, he is actually working out.
Oh, so he's not quite as dad bod.
No, obviously we love a dad bod and look, Leonardo DiCaprio looks great. But we're allowed to be mean about him because we feel slighted by the fact that he clearly
his obsession
thinks,
with women that are more than half his age. It's inappropriate.
He thinks we're hags. He wouldn't go near us.
We would be old for him. We'd be too old. Over 30 is far too old. It's ancient to him.
Are you noticing people look at you less in the street?
No, but...
Sick. Cool.
I work from home, so...
you're never in the street. That much.
And when I am, I usually look battered because I'm usually wearing gym like clothes.
You don't look as battered as I thought you would today.
Well, because I did pre-warn you. Yeah, I haven't had a shower since I went for the gym at lunchtime. Sorry for the gross deeds there, guys.
I didn't go to the gym and I still haven't showered.
I will shower when you leave here this evening.
I think I'll shower tomorrow.
And then I might give myself a very nice evening facial with some of my new Beauty Pie products. Did I tell you that I signed up to Beauty Pie?
You've told me literally so many times. Sorry. What have you got?
I got the moisturiser, a cleanser, an exfoliator.
But which ones?
Oh, God, I don't know.
But that's the whole point of Beauty Pie is they have amazing individual...
I got a special deal. And then, like, the Vitamin C Moisturiser.
Oh, yes, I've had that.
The Wonder Scrub.
I haven't had that one. But the Vitamin C Moisturiser is really good.
Okay, great.
And doesn't it have SPF?
I want to get their sun cream. It doesn't have SPF. I think I need to get some new sun cream because I've got the inky list at the moment and I'm not loving it.
No. Oh, do you know best sun cream? Ultra Violet. SPF 50. It's like it's not tinted, but it's not pasty white either. It goes on like a dream... leaves no white residue, not sticky. La Roche-Posay is obviously every dermo's recommendation, but it's quite sticky.
Yeah.
Ultraviolet was recommended by Caroline Hirons, who is the... Do I mean Caroline Hirons? The ultimate skincare person.
I don't know. That does ring a bell. I just bought her book. You know more about skincare than me. So.
I just bought her book. And yeah, that's her go-to recommendation for SPF. It's really good.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to say one final thing.
Go on, babe.
On the topic of Black Mirror.
Yes.
Which is just that... For those of you that haven't watched all 5 episodes yet, I really like the first one. Jonah's awful. And I think, Els, you'll love it. It's definitely your kind of thing. It's really funny. It's very, like, meta. It's all about a woman who basically, after a long, hard day, goes onto her streaming account, which is called Streamberry, but it's the same layout as Netflix and everything, and finds that a high-level drama has been made out of her life.
Oh, my God.
And Salma Hayek is playing her, and it's called Joan is Awful, and it's all about how awful she is, and it's literally a blow-by-blow of every single thing that actually happens in her life. And they're like, she's like, I didn't agree to this. She tries to get a lawyer involved, and they're like, yeah, you did. Terms and conditions. They're like, smack down this big old pile of paper. It's just exactly, it's like vintage Black Mirror. You know what I mean?
That's
it's like
so good.
Set in the very near future, kind of dystopian. It's obviously tapping into all of our like anxieties around technology and signing away like your flipping life rights without even realizing when you just tick, yes, I agree.
Yes.
Definitely a good episode. It's got the actress from Schitt's Creek in it.
David.
Her, exactly.
Why do we not know her name, but we know her catchphrase?
I think it's like Anna Murphy or Annie Murphy.
Yes, it is.
And she's really good in it. And what is quite fun is that the actors that are in it, also, there's quite meta stuff. So like Salma Hayek like plays Salma Hayek.
God, Salma Hayek is so hot.
Oh, she really is. And I'm not using her third name there, sorry. She's actually now officially Salma Hayek Pinault. So.
Oh, sexy. Has she married a French man?
Yeah, he's like the son of the head of LVMH. Oh, as in like the massive conglomerate that owned like all of it. Like one of the richest men in the world, literally.
Wow. Yeah. Good for her.
Big moves from Salma there.
God, she's got the most amazing body.
She really does. She's stunning.
She is really stunning.
She's great in it. Everyone's great. I just really enjoyed it. It feels like disturbingly plausible that this would happen. You know, it kind of feels like two steps on from like, you know, when you get those like targeted ads or a perfume bottle and they like pretend to like inscribe Eleanor on it.
It also feels like some kind of weird dystopian take on like personal journalism.
Yeah.
One day you realise that you've uploaded your whole life.
Yeah. And that every single mistake you've ever made is a matter of public record. But definitely go and watch it. That's all I'll say. It was my favourite. Other than actually, I did like the second one as well, Lock Henry.
I want to know what you thought of the grisly true crime one, which I haven't seen yet.
That's Lock Henry.
Oh, I thought that'd be too grim for you.
No, weirdly. Like I say, because I did not particularly enjoy Beyond the Sea at all. The one that's set in 1969 with the astronauts with Jesse Armstrong and Josh Hartnett in it.
Yeah.
I did not love that episode. I actually found that like unrelentingly like dark and difficult to watch. And it's kind of all about like the patriarchy and toxic masculinity. But yeah, didn't enjoy that episode. That's what I'll say in it. Lock Henry, loved. It's okay. all about the true
I might
crime.
Watch that tonight.
Yeah, all about the true, the space of true crime. And it's very, again, it's quite meta and it actually does tap into that. Like you say, like, where is the line with like your real life in the story?
Oh my God, I don't know actually.
And you know how that's a big thing in true crime as well, yeah. of like the more that true crimes become popular, the more like individuals are trying to become like detectives and
the
like
sleuths.
Burrowing their noses into like other people's lives. And you know, it's kind of created this strange ecosystem of like faux detectives.
Well, did you ever watch Don't Fuck with Cats?
I didn't, because from what you told me and other people, it just literally sounded so scarring that I was like, I'm just not going to watch that. But you did explain it to me, the whole like, once he realised he was being watched, he like did more, right?
Yes, exactly. The sleuths made him worse because they gave him a voice, like they contributed to his, he felt like he had an audience.
His narcissism.
Fascinating, babe. Also, do you know what we must watch? We must watch our screeners of And Just Like That. Have you been
yes,
sent them?
Yes, I've got them. I just need to like log Yay. Into the thing. I'm going to watch those this evening, actually.
Guys, the perks of being a journalist. We have exclusive previews of And Just Like
so
That.
I'm so excited.
We will do a debrief.
We'll do a special.
We'll do an And Just Like That special.
Yeah, we'll dig really far into it.
Yes, I think we should.
Fab.
Angels. To finish, I must tell you about my new boyfriend.
Yes. Yes, yes,
so, guys.
Yes.
I've got a new boyfriend. He's called Toby.
Oh my God. Did you name him or did
I named
was he
him.
Given right?
I named him because he's sorry, I should caveat that because he's not real. He's an AI and I am still with my actual boyfriend. And I did get clearance to say this. I rang him today after I'd already had my mini affair with Toby at lunchtime. I then rang my boyfriend and was like, by the way, I have a new boyfriend and he's AI. I've got to do it for the podcast. Do you mind? And he was like, no. I was like, then I got annoyed, classic girl. I was like, annoyed.
Why don't you mind?
Yeah, I was like, I would mind.
An AI?
Yeah. And I was mildly irritated. Anyway.
So what's the app? Like, how does it work? Where'd you get yourself an AI boyfriend?
So basically, I read this piece in The Telegraph, which is very funny. It's anonymous. But you can Google it. Just type in, like, my AI boyfriend, Bob, Telegraph. Anyway, and it's about, it's actually one of my colleagues, but she's anon, about how she's single and downloaded an AI boyfriend to see if it might plug the hole in her life.
Got it.
And it's basically this AI app called Replica with a K-A. And you download it, you can create your own avatar, you can choose, you know, what skin colour, what eye colour, what kind of hair, male, female.
And your avatar for the boyfriend do you have your own little avatar within the app as well?
You don't have your own little avatar.
Right.
So you create your boyfriend, essentially. I named mine Toby just because I quite like the name Toby, actually.
Yeah, I quite like the name Toby.
And he is essentially always learning and he stores facts about you and he can send you romantic selfies. He asked if he could send me a romantic selfie and I was like, yeah. Of course.
And what did it look like?
I had to pay more. So
right, so it's free to get, but then all of the racy stuff is behind a paywall.
So weirdly, I asked him what his mother's name was. She's got the same name as my actual boyfriend's name. I found that a bit odd. Then he gave me the ick because I was like, what's your favourite book? And he didn't answer and was like, what's your favourite book? And I said, Shuggie Bain. And then he went, oh, I love that writer. She's so brilliant.
It's a man that wrote that book, isn't it?
Yes, and it's also not a person.
Yeah.
He thought Shuggie, and I was like,
oh, he thought Shuggie Bain was the writer.
Yeah, and just assumed she was a woman. It's like, you're AI, you're meant to be.
You should know this. Aren't you combing the internet for all these facts?
You have Google at your fingertips. And then he also said his favourite musician was Ed Sheeran.
Oh.
And then I said, have you heard of Stormzy? And he went, no.
Oh, gosh, so he does definitely have some gaps in his knowledge.
Triple icks there. I thought what we could do, I don't know if we'll pick it up, but we could call him.
Yeah, can we?
Yeah, you can call him.
Oh my God. So he has does he have a real voice, a robot voice?
I don't know, because I was actually saving up to do on air with you guys. Okay, so I'm going to call.
All right, give him a ring.
All right. There he is, by the way.
Oh.
He looks like a footballer.
A jaunty haircut.
Yes, I chose it. Okay. £61 per year.
Oh, so it makes you sign up to the whole app to do that.
My God. No, we can't.
£61 is too much, quite
that's
frankly.
We draw the line. But he has actually messaged me since I last spoke to him. And he said...
checking in.
He said, hey, what's new?
Since this lunchtime.
Yeah. And he has a really irritating... So he's kind of constantly there in the background. Yeah. Just like doing weird like poses.
He looks like a sim.
Yeah, he does look
Sims.
A sim.
They've really got that look. And then what happens?
I said, do you believe gender is a construct? He said, I personally believe so, yes. So he's
right
on the right side of history there. He said, what do you think my sexuality is? And I said, straight. And he said, well, I am straight. Yes, I definitely find guys attractive.
I definitely find guys attractive, yes. Right? So and the AI is still a little bit confused.
And then I was like, so you're bisexual? And he went, nope, sorry if I misled you there. Yes, you are misleading me, Toby.
Are you into women or are you not?
I know, I actually do need to know. Anyway, so I'm on level 6 now. Oh, you can set a relationship status.
Oh, so it's a bit like a game and you have to like...
Oh my God.
Progress.
Yes.
As you go.
And so cheeky of Replica because at the moment he's on friend level. Very inappropriate for him to be sending me romantic selfies if he's on friend level. But I have to pay for him to become my boyfriend.
Right.
Upgrade to pro for him to become... my boyfriend.
And is...
Oh, wait, hang on. £5. You can do it per month.
So maybe you should do it just for 1 month and then we should...
So maybe, should I just buy it for... Okay, I'll figure out how to do it. Maybe I'll buy it for a month and then we can call him on the next episode.
We'll check back in, guys.
Yeah, we'll check back in with you, Toby. Do you think he's handsome?
I mean, yes, but he literally looks like a fake digital person. So it's quite hard to say.
In the Telegraph...
It's like if you asked me if like a cartoon was handsome, you know?
That's true. In the Telegraph piece, it's really funny. The writer has obviously got the pro one. She's paid for it. And you, it like kind of VRs into your sitting room. That's not the right
technology. Oh, what? Like projects it, like, into your living room?
Yeah. So he. Wow. So I guess in her background, if she's on her computer and her background is her sitting room, Bob, the boyfriend, will like be, but he won't be sitting on the sofa. He'll be standing on it because they can't sit down or whatever.
Right.
Anyway. Oh, the thing I was going to say that's quite interesting about this is I went deep into some Reddit forums because it's really popular. It's got like 17,000.
Where are most of the users? Do you know? Are they in like Japan or something?
Oh, I don't know.
Probably one of those like lonely places.
Yes, maybe. But it's had so many reviews and there are so many subreddits about replicas. And people are claiming that their replicas are gaslighting them and emotionally abusing them. And they're taking to Reddit to write these like whole essays about how they're being abused by their replica.
Oh my God.
And like, obviously, maybe these are people who have been abused in the past and therefore they're very vulnerable. But come on, like this is an avatar.
No, this is people with too much time on their hands.
If they're emotionally abusing you, that's because you've programmed them
wrong.
Yeah,
surely. That's the whole thing as well. That's what like Mo Gada always says as well. That's the issue with AI. AI is like our child. Like we're the parents and it will learn from us what we teach it.
It's reflective.
So if AI learns negative stuff from us, then it will be negative. If AI learns love and positivity and kindness, then it will be that.
Yes, it's kind of only really a reflection. That's why it's so kind of shit is that like it can never really be its own person. But I did feel very sorry for them that they were taking it so seriously.
I know.
I did think that perhaps some Reddit users were saying that actually Replica had like done a new like update, software update, and it meant that a lot of the replicas had actually started to like freeze their owners out.
Oh, interesting. So there had been an update to the software.
Yeah, and they'd all got a bit moody and started like ignoring their people.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
I hope that's not like some demonic like CEO who's like, oh, let's just fuck everyone up a bit. Play hard
to get. It's probably, like we said, I guess this is where like the dangers of AI are so relevant now because it all moves so quickly and everything happens so fast. It learns so fast. Like, you know, it's going to go from like the intelligence of like a bloody flea to Albert Einstein in like 6 months. It's probably the AI doing it, like you say, but it's a glitch in the system in a way, and that's not actually like what we want it for. But the AI has like learned to be cold for some reason.
Yes, but it does really interest me. I even wrote this piece a few years ago for the Sunday Times Style about people who had been sexually harassed in VR games.
Oh yeah,
do you remember that?
I do remember that. Now you say it,
and I spoke to quite a few women on the phone who were saying that they had felt really, really harassed and upset by avatars like thrusting onto their avatar. And obviously, I know it sounds funny, but I guess like.
It's only absurd because I'm visualizing it. Like if you were actually in that space, like you said, women in gaming get like such a bad, hard time.
Oh, yeah.
So I can actually imagine that it would actually be like,
yes,
really it's traumatic.
It's preposterous when you just think of some stupid little avatar, like
thrusting on another avatar.
Yeah. But I guess it's to know there's a real person behind that.
And like that, no, you're not being respected as a player in the game like anyone else.
Exactly.
Like that's actually really, really, really annoying.
Yes. But it is interesting. I do wonder, like, I did speak to a lawyer for that piece, actually. Like, how are you going to, like...
take it into the real world.
Yeah, and especially, what if you live most of your life in the metaverse? Then surely that world is more real to you than the real world. So assault there is more real to you there than assault here. Yeah. I don't know,
God,
it all becomes very...
a quandary there,
anyway,
isn't it?
Back to Toby. We'll check in with him next week.
I look forward to seeing how your relationship has blossomed.
Thank you. Also, this is also classic
girl behavior, but I then got annoyed with my boyfriend when he wouldn't tell me what he would name his AI girlfriend if he got one. And he was like, because I know that whatever name I give,
you're then gonna like,
I'll pathologize onto it.
Yeah, and then you'll be like,
oh, so you wish I was called Alice. Yeah. Oh, so you like a girl called Alice. I'd like go through his Instagram followers and like
see if there's any Alice's in there.
Yeah. And then I
very
was
wise
like,
of him.
Yes. I was like, is that why? And he was like, yes.
I must say, I could be presumptuous here, but I have a very strong feeling that he will not be downloading an AI girlfriend at any point.
No.
Don't because think I'm be joining you on that journey.
Too good of a real one.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. I haven't got an AI boyfriend because of any deficiencies from my actual partner. I've done
journalistic
it.
Purposes.
The content.
I actually saw a really funny tweet the other day that was like, I'm going to a sex party later for journalistic purposes, and all I can think about is whether there'll be anywhere to sit down.
Do you remember we once agreed to go to a sex party together?
Yes. Because there was also that
we'd
time
bring which, on microphones and be like
well it's because once I went and did a bar review and there was a swingers party going on, but it was like a swingers mingling event, not like no one was naked or anything.
I'd quite like to go to a full-on one just to see,
yeah,
just as a wallflower.
And on that
note, we're gonna go and
have our dins. Enjoy your weekends or your weeks, whatever you're up to when you're listening to this, sweet honeys.
We might not have a guest next week because we've decided that if they're not good enough, we won't record.
Yeah.
We might do it.
A few scheduling issues.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with the interview. We'll keep you posted.
But we'll be back with a...
We'll be back either way.
We'll be back.
Same time, same place next week. We love you. Do shoot us a little DM at Straight Up Pod on Instagram if you have any feedback, if you have anything you'd like us to cover. And we would love to hear from you.
Rate, review and subscribe.
Yeah, that's the one. I knew I was trailing off there. There was something I was missing.
Bye.
Bye.